70. He had two pack burros. He came into the park and spent some 60 days in there prospecting, and then left out and went over the hill down to the heading for the Indian Agency, the Ute Indian Agency over by Mount Rose. And he said it would have been some 65 or 66 days since he had seen another white person or another person to speak to. Mm-hmm. And he told us then about having come back later and coming in over Stony Pass, and he said that they built a road over the trail place that I came in first in around 1870.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's rather intriguing because my wife is a native of Silverton, having been born there. And she got quite a kick out of that, hearing about people coming in there before there could anybody to see. Of course, at that time, the land was all under the Ute Indians. It belonged to them on the reservation. In 1873, they made the Bruneau Treaty with the federal government. It was ratified by Congress and proclaimed by the president in 1874, and Silverton was started that year. And so that's a little background on Silverton and San Juan County, the subject of our program tonight. Now, Howardsville was the first county seat, and by the way, that was the first county seat on the western slope. It was the first county seat of what is now La Plata County also, because La Plata County was taken out of that later. And it was only a county seat, however, for 2 years, because in 1875 it was moved down to, or 76, it was moved down to Silverton without benefit of authority. Yeah. And nobody knows to this day why, how it was actually established. You know,
That's happened in a lot of places.
That's happened in
one
of
the county seat.
And our guest tonight, Mr. Crocker, who, by the way, is 96 years old, has lived in this area many years and lived in Silverton and was in business up there. What business were you in up there in Silverton,
Mr. Crocker? Well, I started in with the jewelry and drug business with Dave Cunningham. Dave was the drug ham and I was the jewelry ham, but we were partners in the business.
And what year did you come there, Mr. Crocker?
Well, I came January the 12th, 1903.
And about how big was the town of Silverton at that time, and what was the
Well, it was about there was about 5,000 population in San Juan County, miners and all, about 3,000 in the town. Mm-hmm. The city population, about 3,000.
And
I remember the way I used to keep track of it was there was 30 saloons, a saloon for every 300 people.
One saloon for every 300 people.
Yes.
Well, that's,
mm-hmm.
That's a good way to keep track.
You not only were a watchmaker and sold watches and all that, but you manufactured jewelry also,
yes,
didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I manufactured.
Did your own design and everything?
Yes, yes.
I suppose there are still people around who
Yes, there's people that have jewelry that I made, and then a good many of them went out of the country, and I had a young fellow call on me, an Italian descent. He and his mother came by my place over here, and he had a piece of jewelry that I had made, and his father was dead, made for his father.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you, I suppose you had a chance to see Silverton. It was still going strong in 19. Was
oh,
there
yes.
still gambling going on, open gambling?
Oh, yes, it was gambling. There was gambling all on Blair Street, more or less gambling. Billy Lutz was a big place, and Jack Slattery had a big gambling, and Hank Sherman and Billy and Keeler, and they was gambling in most of the saloons. They'd have a good deal like out Las Vegas.
Would you say they were honest?
Well, they claimed to be honest.
Uh-huh. Not all of them.
Well, yes. I think most of them were on the square. I'll tell you why. Sometimes in the slack time, I went in one of the gambling houses, I knew them, And I played every system that they could think of. I wasn't playing, and we were passing checks and everything, but I didn't win anything. Mm-hmm. And they'd have a scheme for the outsider to book, how to beat the game. And but at the same time, I made a lot of contraptions for cheating, too.
As a jeweler, you kept their wheels up and things like that?
Well, I kept their faro boxes, and then they'd have schemes and holdouts that they could hook here on their knees and pull cards up, you know. And, but I don't know. The most successful thing I ever seen was a little old man come in, and he looked like a deacon in a church, and he talked like I'd think a deacon should talk.
Yeah.
And he had me make some little clips for in the roulette wheel. And he had colored rubber covers that he put on them just to cover there, and the ivory ball rolling, if it had hit one of them, it would bounce out. Mm-hmm. And I made him a whole set. He told me what they were for. And I went down, and for instance, you'd pick out a 10 and play all around it. I don't know whether either one of you know much about
it. No, I don't know. I don't know much about it.
Anyhow, chronic players, they'll pick out a number, and of course it can pay if you happen to play, put your check on one number and it comes up, you get 32 times and so on. Yeah. But this fellow, he'd catch these fellows that play a system. And he'd set these clips in, the numbers they were playing.
Sure.
And I went down to see where he was gambling. He told me he didn't make any bones about it. Yeah. I never said anything because I don't know. It's just one of those things. Good he'd like a doctor keeping his...
Sure. Ethics, privileged communication or something.
Well, they seemed to trust me on that, and they explained then how they could beat it.
Well, you know, I've heard that Silverton had a famous woman gambler by the name of Poker Annie. Did you ever know about her?
I knew Poker Alice. I wouldn't say that we were on intimate terms by any means, but she wore very well-tailored men's suits. I remember that in particular. And she seldom came up on the main street. She was down Billy Luke's dance hall, and she's playing poker with the men. And she played there. She came over from Creed, as I remember right. And she was there sometime, and then she went up, I understood she went up to Deadwood's, South Dakota. Mm-hmm. She might have went under another name, I don't know.
Something about Silverton or any mining town that was rich, you always hear about high grading. Do you think much of that went on from the Silverton mines?
Well, rich ore in a mine is a temptation for high graders. And there was a tremendous lot of high grading. And they can't prevent it. It's one of the things that they even strip them and everything else, and they'll hide this high grade. And those fellows working in the mine, they can tell it when they run onto it. Now, I've been in some of the mines, the Gold King and the Sunny Side, some of them. I couldn't tell where they had rich ore. I couldn't tell the color of it. But these fellows know the...
That's their business.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're miners.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Silverton has a paper, newspaper, called the Silverton Standard and Miner. That paper's been operating continuously since 1874. It's the first paper in Southwest Colorado, and it has chronicled the news over all these years. You know, that goes back that 75 years. Papers that has stood up because the community stayed up. It was one of the ghost towns that didn't ghost.
You must have known several famous people, then. Otto Mears comes to mind immediately.
Well, Otto Mears, I can claim that Otto Mears was quite a good friend of mine, and he used to make our store He'd come there every day, and he'd always visit a while, and we had a cigar counter there, and Otto would buy a cigar. And he was very friendly, and he'd like to talk, but Otto was a fellow that never would bore you. He would talk to you so long, and then he'd go. Mm-hmm. And he used to attend our parties. I belonged to what they might call a social crush up there a while, like they have in every town. And Otto would come, and he made it a strict rule to go home at 10 o'clock. We had well sherbet and beer, some beer and some eating. And Otto was, I never knew him to drink. I suppose he did take some drinks. And he would come in most every day. And then he was in the office there of the Silver and Northern and the Eureka Road. And then he was there when they built from Eureka up to Animas Forks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I felt more than better acquainted with Otto. The first time I went in to see him, I had known him and done work for him, and I met Mrs. Mears, and I knew his daughter, Cora Pitcher, Bob Pitcher's wife. And I went in one time to see Otto in the office down there at the Silver Northern Otis, and I said to him, he was at a desk. I said, Mr. Mears, I said, my folks are out here, my father and mother, and I'd like to get a pass up Red Mountain for us. Otto says, what? Have you no pass? He says, you write Mr. Crocker out the pass. He says, I tell you, Mr. Crocker, after this, you get your pass from Denver every year. You don't need to ask for the pass. And
you know, those passes are quite an item among railroad buffs.
Yes.
Now, all kinds of
buffs. I got there a little too late to get the fancy silver passes.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I got just the others.
Did you ever know the newspaper editor, Dave Day, at Ouray, and then when he came down to Durango?
I got acquainted with Dave Day. My partner was married to Tully. Miss Tully. Mm-hmm. And Miss Tully was a sister to Tom Tully that married one of Dave Day's daughters, Known Day. I don't know whether you knew Known or not.
No, I didn't, but I knew about her.
Well, so I met Dave. I got pretty well acquainted with him. I used to come down to Trimble Springs, and Mrs. Day run Trimble Springs there, the hotel.
Now, they owned that.
No, no. Tom Burns owned it.
Tom Burns, I see.
He leased it.
Yeah, they leased it. And some of Joe Freed's girls were waiting on table there. Mm-hmm. And she served a good meal. They had chicken and ham and everything, home cooking. And the springs were good then, the hot water. And every morning, the way I happened to meet Dave, at night he'd come up in the evening on the passenger train. He was running his office down here at Durango, you know, printing
yes.
paper here.
Yes.
So he'd come up there. But I'd heard a good deal about him when he was the Solid Muldoon
yes.
over at Ouray.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I'll inject this right now. There's been a big dispute about the Solid Muldoon.
You mean why the name?
Yeah, the name.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And even Dave's sons didn't know. Now, I heard my father came from back in Vermont, and the Irish there, if he was a good Democrat, he was a Solid Muldoon.
Dave Day was a Democrat, all right.
Oh, yes, he was a Democrat.
He
but
he
well, the Denver Post. Dave was having a little fiction about Polly Pry. Polly Pry was a writer for the Denver Post, and she was quite a character, evidently. And so Dave would take a whack at her every little while. Somebody shouted, "Polly, up Denver!" Took a shot at her, and Dave said she never flinched when the gun went off.
Speaking of Democrats, I know that Silverton, Telluride, and the mining towns, they had quite a to-do over politics.
Yeah.
How did it stack up in Silverton between the Democrats and the Republicans?
Well, the miners' union, you know, was pretty strong there. It came over from Telluride, and the unions are pretty much Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But they couldn't depend on it. They were split up there. Of course, the Democrat Party was the majority, but we used to elect Republicans. I was one of the big shots on the Republican side, and
mm-hmm.
we put up candidates in our election, and there was some Republican sets you couldn't get out of office. They're permanent.
Yes.
So it was a pretty good pitch in, and it depended. Now, many of the, there was a big Italian and Austrian
community there.
Yes.
Yes.
Among the miners.
Yes.
And they would often vote the way the mine bosses
wanted them to.
Yes, wanted them to vote. And they were pretty much, had a very good following among the Italians and some of the other nationalities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, was you ever in Silverton during any of the snow blockades?
Oh, yes. I was in there one time, 90 days, when they pulled over. We had a snow tunnel down there where the snow shed was.
Uh-huh.
And they dug a hole right through the snow there. But we didn't, the only thing they got out of, I guess, T-bone steaks and fresh oysters or something, I don't know. There's plenty to eat there.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, I can remember back in winter of 32, 33, when the dairy run out of hay up there, and this farmer's supply and Durango.
Well, that was true, too.
Yeah. The farmer's supply and Durango took the bales of hay and cut them down to the size that would be acceptable for parcel post.
Yeah.
And they shipped this a ton of hay to Silverton by parcel post. And train hauled it as far as Rockwood. And then the post office department contracted with a packer to pack it on into Silverton
to get
it in there. And that was, of course, the packing come pretty high.
Well, they pulled the postage. They pulled some of it in on some bargains, fellas with snowshoes.
Yeah, that was from down by Needleton.
Yes.
And they got the train up there.
Yeah. Yes. I've read it was about that same place that one time, and I don't know the year, but Silverton had been without a train for 60-some days. And the boys from town walked over the slide and got to where the train could get to, down about Needleton, I guess, and got the Denver papers and so on and took them to Silverton and sold them for $1 each.
Well, I don't remember so much about what they done about the papers. We got mail in there. They was fellows with snowshoe cross,
yeah.
And they took pack trains. They get a trail pack down there. Now down as far as the snow shed, I seen a horse with snowshoes on. Fella had him down there. He had made special shoes for it. I don't know. He had to train him to walk with them.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we got along all right. Now I'll tell you, we laid in supplies in the winter.
Yeah, prepared for it.
Now I used to have a place there. And I'd buy 5-6 turkeys dressed in a pig shoot, about a 200-pound hog, and maybe a quarter of beef,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people they stocked up on that,
yeah.
And it's true they got out of some things, but
I've read that you know, they called Bat Masterson,
yeah,
in there one time. What was the main difficulty that they wanted a man that famous in Silverton for?
Well, they had killed the marshal there. he and a young fella, I could tell his name, but I won't because he has relatives.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Tom Kimball is related to. And his mother. And they caught him, they killed a marshal, and they come down to Cascade.
Yes.
There, they went over into Hermosa, and there's a posse caught him, come down and caught him, and they hung two of them, and the highway is built right over their graves up there now.
Right at Cascade?
Well, this side, up there where the end of the flume is,
yes,
where that resort. The two graves are there, the highway built right over these two graves. They were there quite prominent, the rock stuff, I suppose, they just scraped it away, up there about the Hermosa Cliffs, up in that district there. And so as far as Silverton was concerned, they didn't have the, it wasn't such a wild, whooping town as you might think. There was a lot of those, like from Dodge City, drifted in there, an ex, Bat Madison, I suppose he was looking for a job, and they appointed him marshal there. And I didn't, the only time I ever met him was over at Telluride, when he was a guard at the Tomboy mine. He stopped me there, and had another fellow and I, going down from Bridalveil Falls. Mm-hmm. And that's the only time I ever met Bat Madison.
And he was hired as a guard there at the time of the strike.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was hired as a guard.
Mm-hmm.
When Buckley Wells was running the
smuggler.
Yeah.
Yeah, the smuggler mine. Mm-hmm.
And they never had any serious trouble. Like I wrote a piece of the paper, I said the marshal wanted to make an arrest one time, and he had to run all over town hunting a gun. Which was pretty near fact.
Yes.
You know, one of the things I remember reading in the old Silverton Standard was that they had some dog teams up there that they used in various times in the winter for the different things, hauling in mail or hauling in medicine or something like that. And one of the items that caught my eye was that they had so much snow they couldn't get a team up to the cemetery, and when they had a funeral, they used the dog team to take the casket up to the cemetery.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first time I'd ever heard of being used in that, dog team being used that way.
Yes, I am.
But the snow slides were one of the real dangers in that country, and I guess you had a lot of them while you were up there.
Did you know the Klinger brothers that run the paper there?
I didn't do them, no.
They used to publish a comic sheet called the Gladstone Kibosh, take off on.
Yeah.
And now I had a funny thing, I have never mentioned it. Some of you may have been reading the history of Kansas about the Bender family.
Yes.
The Klinger brothers came from back there, and I worked in Parsons, Kansas for couple of years or more, near Independence and near where they, and my folks had known of these Benders, and one of the Klingers, now they're dead, they can't anybody, it's all gone, there's no proof, and I have no proof, but I'm satisfied in my own mind. Kate Bender and her husband, she died in Silverton. They claimed they caught them down the Indian Territory and lynched them. They never caught them at all because I knew some of the men that claimed to be in there. They never brought back any evidence. My uncle stopped at their place in Kansas when they were killing. They killed about 14 people. So I'm satisfied that Keith Bender died there in Silverton. And there was quite a lot of characters come there and died there in Silverton.
Did a lot of the bad element move over from Creed into Silverton or Cripple Creek or?
Well, they came from Creed over there and some from Telluride.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't particularly call them so much a bad element as we judge today. Now, they never tried to hold up the bank there or anything like that. You couldn't get out of there.
Yes.
Yeah. You couldn't. And I was surprised. I came from Joplin, St. Joe, Missouri, when I came to Silverton. And the what gambling houses I'd been in Joplin, it was a wide-open town. There was at each gambling table, there was a fellow sitting up on a chair with two big six-shooters. When I came up to Silverton and heard there was so much gambling, I went in some of the gambling houses. It was the tamest place I ever saw. Yeah. Wasn't a gun in sight.
I think that was true of a lot of mining towns after 1900 anyway.
Yeah.
There was, I think, very little violence and trouble, generally speaking.
Now, we never worried about being held up or anything in a jeweler's store. I lost stuff, sneak thieves.
Yeah.
But I'd be back or something. Was lost. A few things. But there was no... the only trouble they ever had there was some feuds that were carried over from Italy and over in Austria and around.
Mm-hmm.
They carried some of their old country feuds over there. Now, I remember one Italian told me, he said he was a bandito over in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Bandito.
Yeah.
And, but as far as any holdup there, they was a killing or two over women.
But no more then, maybe, than now.
No. Mm-hmm. And they used to find, if a fellow beat up, they had the roll down there. There's about 300 dance hall girls, and they had their pimps, you know, that hung out with them.
Sure.
And the justice of the peace, you know, he'd find them fellas like the dickens if they, one of them beat up on his girl, you know, his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, there was nothing beyond that.
Yes.
And I never, you could go out with money or go in there and nobody would.
Nobody was going to rob you.
No, you wasn't any danger of being robbed.
You knew a lot of people. I'm sure you've been out at the Stoiber Mansion. Did you know the Stoibers? You know, out from Howardsville, right up the way there?
The old Stoiber Mansion.
The what?
Stoiber. Stoiber home.
Oh. Yes. Up from...
just above town.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, that was quite a house, wasn't it?
Yes. Stoiber's?
Yeah.
Well, that was down, that was just above Silverton.
Just above Silverton.
Yeah.
Just about a mile up from
Silverton,
up beyond the Para. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I understand Claude Dearing tore that down, salvaged the bricks, and built his house up here at Hermosa out of the brick from the old Stoiber Mansion.
Well, I'm glad to say I was entertained there a good many times. But that was after the Stoibers had sold the Silver Lake. And Ed Stoiber was there. He died of heart trouble very suddenly. And the other Stoiber...
Assignment 6 has brought you San Juan Heritage, produced by this station in cooperation with the Center of Southwest Studies at Fort Lewis College in Durango. Your hosts for this series, Dr. Robert Delaney, head of the Center of Southwest Studies, and Mr. Arthur Wyatt, former Colorado State Representative and long resident of the Basin. Their guest this evening has been William H. Crocker, a resident of the area for about 66 years. Be watching again on August 19th at this same time for the next in this series. San Juan Heritage has been directed by Dan Wilson, engineered by Jim Davis, camera by Steve Gilkey. This is Dan Wilson speaking and thanking you for joining us on San Juan Heritage.